Welcome to the Oscar Postmortem edition of the Fame Fatale podcast. I'm exhausted. I mean, Leslie Gornstein. And this is the show you've been waiting for. And I apologize for making you wait for it. The Oscar week was so frenetic with work, I couldn't even think about imparting knowledge unto you until now. But I'm going to make up for it. Oh, yeah. I'm going to make up for it. If you're wondering why Birdman, or as my late great aunt would say, the Birdman, one best picture, I have some dish on the Oscar campaigns that may clear that up for you, because God knows it was not a great movie, not even a good movie. Also, recently a listener wrote in all outraged because she thought the Oscars red carpet was too glitzy, too full of diamonds. Why, this listener wrote to me, don't A-listers wear clothes that raise awareness about poverty and starvation? I actually found out for you. And another listener asked what it's like to screen movies if you're an Academy member, and boy, did I find out. Plus, just how much that new Oscar is worth to Eddie Redmayne. With me this week from Chill City is Clint. Hello.
Hello.
I understand you have something to say about a comedic actor and clothes.
And clothes, yes, that is true.
And here's how it's going to work. Because you're co-hosting this show for free, I'm going to let you talk about clothes and a comedic actor later on in the show.
Do I get paid with a signed autograph book?
Yes, I will give you a signed autograph book. And by the way, for those of you who have not gotten signed autograph books of mine, may I repeat? It was Oscars. I'm exhausted. You will get it. Gotta trust mommy. First, let me get some dish you won't hear about anywhere else. And it has to do with the Birdman, that movie that took home the Best Picture trophy on Sunday. Did you see that, Clint?
I saw it Friday.
And?
Great filmmaking. Didn't really hold my interest, but I thought it was really very interesting.
You thought it was actually interesting?
No, I did. I mean, you know, I realized after the fact that I missed the ending because I walked away from the TV about 2 minutes or too early.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting.
Really? Enough to hold your gaze? All right. Well, there's a reason why Selma didn't win and why American Sniper didn't win. And it has nothing to do with the merits of these movies and how good they were. During the run-up to the Oscars, I had a clandestine conversation with an actual Academy voting member. And he shed some very interesting light on what was going on this season in terms of who was voting for what. In short, the takeaway is this. This is what I got from this guy. Selma and American Sniper were both plagued with negative news coverage in the months leading up to the Oscar vote. You know that. You know about that.
I do know about that.
Yeah, American Sniper, critics said, falsely linked to the 9/11 attacks to the Iraq War. And Selma was attacked for its possibly false portrayal of then-President Lyndon Baines Johnson. What you probably don't know, in Chill City and elsewhere, is the reason why we know all of this isn't necessarily because of good reporting or grassroots outrage. We know this because those two news stories were likely the result of Oscar campaign smear tactics. According to the longtime Oscar voter I spoke with, he's seen Oscar votes come and Oscar votes go, and he's also done Oscar publicity for off and on for a long time, entertainment publicity, and he told me he is certain 100% that those news stories were fueled by people wanting other movies to win. Now consider this factor. Imitation Game and Whiplash were never considered to be real contenders for Best Picture. They were never even really on the radar. Now that leaves Grand Budapest Hotel, Boyhood, and The Birdman, right? Grand Budapest Hotel took the Golden Globe. But Grand Budapest Hotel, at its core, is a comedy. It just is. It's a comedy. And Oscars don't really give Best Picture statuettes to comedies. They just don't, because they're too important. And if they were to ever give an Oscar to a comedy, their gravitas would dry up and blow away, and they would become unimportant to themselves. So what's left? Birdman and Boyhood. Boyhood is about a boy growing up. Birdman is about a man with the hardest job in the world, quote unquote, risking it all. That's not what I think. That's what Hollywood people think about their industry. Remember when Jodie Foster got up on stage a few years ago? Do you remember this? To accept an award, and she announced that her job was literally the hardest job in the world. Do you remember that?
I probably don't, because I probably fell on the off the couch and hit my head laughing.
Yeah, well, that's how actors view themselves. That's how the entertainment world views itself. Forget the Navy SEALs, forget the presidency, forget teachers, forget ER techs, forget that poor clown wasting his life away researching a cure for AIDS. The hardest job in the world is entertaining the people. All right? So which movie do you think Oscar voters are going to honor? The one about the useless boy who's not famous and does nothing more than grow up? Or Michael Keaton, who could lose his house in Malibu and end up crashing on his daughter's couch in between tapings of Dancing with the Stars? To a Hollywood person, those are the highest stakes in the world. Nothing is more important. So put it all together, and the next time someone asks you why Birdman won, you can answer with authority. It's a combination of smear campaigns and a Jodie Foster mentality.
Okay, so quick question.
What?
Which one had your vote?
Oh, Grand Budapest Hotel by far.
Yeah, me too.
Oh my God. I think every single second of that movie was unforgettable. It had real stakes that I cared about. I cared about what happened next. And that's the difference for me between The Birdman and The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Well, and the great thing was, I mean, that movie was so tight. I mean, every single point of that movie only existed within that movie. I mean, it was Wes Anderson at his absolute best.
It was. And then you compare the lack of hype for that movie versus this incredible amount of Oscar hype for the Michael Keaton movie. And it's like the Emperor's New Bird suit. Like there was, my husband and I tuned into it the other day to watch it for the first time. And literally Michael Keaton has no clothes, but also figuratively, we just kept waiting for the real movie to start. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the great thing about Boyhood, Birdman, and The Grand Budapest Hotel, I think, is that those are only stories that could be told using film.
That's
true. You
know
what I mean? I mean, they were all just like really great filmmaking. Selma, American Sniper, the others are really, I mean, you know, a book could do as good of a job as the movies did.
That's a good point. You should be an Oscar voter.
I should be.
You have to take me as your plus one to all the screenings, which we're going to talk about later.
I am white and middle-aged, so...
So you fit in perfectly.
So I'm doing good with the
demo. That's right. You just had your birthday, too. Happy 45th.
Oh, thanks.
I know. I just said it out loud, but you put it on Facebook. You put it on Facebook.
The world doesn't follow me on Facebook like the world follows the Femme Fatale.
And if anybody wants to know the real reason why I didn't like Birdman, I can sum it up like this. To me, for a story to be a good story in any format, you don't have to like the main character. You don't have to like any of the characters. But it has to be a compelling story. You have to care about what happens next. Think about Breaking Bad. Most of those people were in some form or another morally despicable. But I had to know what happened next. I had to. That's good storytelling.
Yeah,
I don't care whether Michael Keaton loses his house in Malibu and has to go on Dancing with the Stars. Why do I give a shit? So a rich person may lose a house and have to sleep on his daughter's couch, and his play may fail, and that's considered to be, in the words of this play, risking everything?
Right.
Just, I'm done. Clint, you want to read the next question, or the first question, actually?
I do.
Go ahead.
Ava asked via the email.
Go ahead.
What's it like for Academy members to screen movies? I read that Academy prefers for members to see films in theaters, but I also know that DVDs get sent to members.
That's true.
When members watch movies at a theater, is it a special theater with members only? Is it an extra nice theater? Do members get free popcorn and candy when they attend these screenings?
Well, you've been white and 45 for a few days now, right? So have you gotten your Academy membership yet?
Oh, yeah. It's in the mail.
So have you seen...
With my AARP card.
So have you seen the theaters that... they let you use?
Well, that's what I'm coming out in April to do, is see the special theaters.
Oh, that's right. You are coming out in April. You're going to have to do a special studio edition here with me.
In studio.
Okay. There aren't special... The theaters where these screenings happen aren't special, like, all the time, like 24 hours a day. They're venues. They're private venues. Or they're public venues. But the screening is usually a members-only screening. So the theater may be any old theater. It may be a theater that the Academy has. It may be a theater that the Lowe's has that's being rented out by somebody for the screening. But the screening is usually a members-only screening. And I say that because even the Academy, with its theaters, has public events where you can buy a ticket. Do you follow me so far?
I'm with you.
Good. The screening is usually a members-only screening where non-famous people like that useless kid character in Boyhood and the guy who's researching AIDS can't go in. They can't go in. They don't have the hardest job in the world. The people in the Academy do, damn it. And we will not have any unimportant people in this theater. I've been to private screenings before. Some of them have had popcorn. But Academy screenings likely do not, at least the Academy screenings that happen after nominations are announced. How do I know this? The rules for Oscars, it's amazing how many people don't know the rules for the Oscars. They are so strict that they literally, during the voting period, do not allow people who are showing the films for consideration to offer free popcorn.
Fear of bribery.
It's fear of bribery. Want to hear some more Oscar rules? You want to hear it? You want to hear it? Here, go. All right.
Go.
Let's start with the producers hoping to nab a Best Picture trophy or maybe a Best Documentary Feature, okay? Before a film is even nominated, the Best Picture contender has to have a commercial run of a week or more in a movie theater in Los Angeles County, okay? Precisely 323 films met that criteria this time. Now, that's pretty reasonable compared with the rules for Best Documentary Feature. You ready for this?
Ready.
If you want to be considered for Best Documentary Feature, among the requirements, commercial runs both in Los Angeles and the borough of Manhattan. Not Queens, not the Bronx, not Staten Island.
Not Brooklyn.
Not even Brooklyn.
Not even Williamsburg.
It doesn't matter what kind of mustache you have. It doesn't matter how many brew pubs you know. You can't do it. All right? And a theatrical release in only one of those cities disqualifies you. It's got to be both. Both. The film also must be in a specific audio and video formats, which I'm not going to go into because it'll make your eyes glaze over. Must screen at least 4 times a day during its theatrical runs and during specific hours. Must charge for admission, has to be reviewed by a major film critic, and must be advertised in one of five specific newspapers. And oh, no dinky ads, no doing it dinky. They have to be at least 1 inch by 2 inches and have particular information in them. And they also list the places where your film can be reviewed. And if it's not in one of those, disqualified. Now, let's move on to actors. Once a film or an actor or a film or an actor is nominated, a fresh wave of rules cascades across Beverly Hills and beyond. Most of those regulations are aimed at keeping the voting as fair as possible. The Academy's way of doing that, of maintaining control, is controlling not only what voters get, like no fancy gifts, but also what they see and hear. For example, a distributor can host free screenings of a nominated film, but not excessively. Get this. You know those Academy Awards screenings we were just talking about?
Right.
Academy members may be invited to a maximum of 4 of a nominated film that are preceded or followed by filmmaker Q&As. Also, no free food or even free drinks. I'm assuming they will allow you to go to the water fountain. But if it's got fizz in it, no. Nothing carbonated. That's too fancy. Even the design for the screening passes or the screener DVDs, like when you go to a screening as an Academy member, you get a little pass so that people know that you belong there. Even that pass cannot be too candy-like and tempting. No photos on the passes, no eye-catching artwork on the screener DVDs. You can put the logo for the film on it, but that's it. Even Oscar-related conversation has strict guidelines. Like, if I've made a film and you're my middle-aged white voter,
right,
I can call you to confirm your address, but not to discuss the film at all. I can't email you and brag about my film. Can't do any of that.
Huh.
That gets better. The screenings often have, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Sometimes they have dress codes. There were a couple of screenings that happened at this fancy club, okay, called the Metropolitan Club in New York. And the invitation actually said to the Academy voters, if you want to come screen this movie, jacket and tie required. That's how many rules there are when you're involved in this crap.
Is it like the 21 Club where they have, like, you know, extra jackets available should you show up?
I mean, I'm assuming that as long as you can't keep them, because that's a gift.
Oh, that's true.
But then again, that could be a free jacket rental.
Yeah, that's
that could,
true.
That could count almost as like a free rental of a tux.
Right. That is a service. No goods or service.
No goods or services. Now, of course, if you're nominated for an Oscar and people outside the race want to give you gifts, like a bicycle company that's trying to go for, you know, publicity, they do that all the live long day. As a matter of fact, I think I may put up on my blog a link to some of the most amazing gifts that Oscar nominees got this year. It includes a gold-toned bicycle, a trip to Bali, designer furniture, and more. I think I'll put that link on my blog. What do you think?
I think it's great. And I think it's also, I mean, you know, there's taxes implied with that. And, you know, some of these guys, the documentarians, probably can't even afford the taxes on some of these gift baskets.
So you're actually trying to get me to pity them?
Well, no, I'm not. Well, I'm saying, I mean, they might have to look at that basket and say, no, thanks.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Laura Poitras. Well, Laura Poitras is probably already getting dinged by the IRS every single year.
Right.
For the stuff that she's filmed for Citizen Four. So she's probably screwed until the day she dies anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. You want to read the next question?
I do. It's from Jill, and she's writing via email.
Go ahead.
Oh, Lord. I would like to make a challenge to all the celebrities that will attend the Oscars in February. Instead of paying hundreds of thousands of dollars, which they don't, right, to wear designer necklace, earrings, or bracelet, why not wear something that will bring light to the poverty in Uganda? The celebrities could wear jewelry from Bead for Life and make a huge statement while helping raise funds and awareness to eradicate poverty. Come on, how much money do they need? Or do they need to show they have? Let's challenge them to wear something that will make a difference. And there's a lot of exclamation points. Mm-hmm. I'm just a mother from Indiana who would love actors / actresses to really make a difference with their fame and fortune. I would love for my kids to see this.
Okay. First of all, let's repeat that ask your actors don't pay to wear a single thing on
they
the
are
red
paid.
Carpet. They are paid to wear things on the red carpet. So when you see them wearing Tiffany or whatever else, they're probably getting paid by Tiffany up to $1 million to wear those jewels on the red carpet. The dresses, if they're not being paid to wear a dress, or if they're not part of a endorsement deal for a fashion house, like, for example, Marion Cotillard is the face of Dior, so she wore Dior, probably as part of her contract with Dior, then they're at least borrowing the dresses for free and then returning them, right? Do you follow so far?
We'll get back to that one.
Yeah, now let's move on to the challenge to wear the beads. Okay, my personal problem with emails like this is that it's kind of coercive. The messaging implies that if you don't do as this listener suggests, then you've got quote unquote failed a challenge, and that's, to me, that's playing really dirty pool. It's a little bullyish to me. It's a little bullyish. It's also, if I could be blunt, a bit naive to how things work in Hollywood. And I'm not alone in saying that. That's just not me saying that. I interviewed Michael O'Connor, who's a stylist who works with celebrities every Oscar season, particularly in the field of jewelry. And he basically arranges for stars to borrow pieces and return them. And here's what he had to say about this. He says, when it comes to the fancy diamonds, the kind that you saw all over the Oscars, the industry is already doing stuff to eradicate the very poverty and raise the very awareness that Jill is writing about. And here's a quote. The fact is, with those kind of jewelers and in the communities around the mines, there's a tremendous amount of giving back and education that goes into those communities. They are bringing in educators to teach women how to make jewelry, also teaching them about the business of jewelry. And here's another quote from Michael. This is not me. Beads are not necessarily bringing any more awareness to the situation than anything else. In these modern days, the jewelry industry is doing an admirable job to make sure the communities where these gems originate are really getting the things they need for survival and future growth. So, rhetorical question. Let me ask you this. Would you rather a star wear beads that raise awareness for poverty? Or wear a piece of jewelry whose production has already fueled education and jobs and clean water and all this for the community surrounding the mine where the jewel originated. One other thing to consider. About 10 or 15 years ago, stars were all about using their gowns and tuxes to raise awareness for things, particularly AIDS. Remember that? They were all wearing the little ribbons.
The red ribbon.
The red ribbons. They were all wearing little ribbons, the red ribbons symbolizing AIDS. And cut to today, and there's still AIDS.
I would challenge you that AIDS is not the death sentence it was before they started wearing the ribbons.
They were wearing those ribbons well after it became a death sentence. They got on that bandwagon. A lot of them, like the by the time people were wearing those ribbons to the Oscars, it wasn't a death sentence anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, this wasn't the time when Elizabeth Taylor was fighting for people's lives. This was like the third wave.
True.
Yeah, I don't know. So, I don't know. I know you wanted to ask about, or you want to talk about clothes. Did you want to talk about Oscar clothes, or did you want to talk about your clothes?
No, we don't have to talk about my clothes. No, right. I was going to ask favorite.
Favorite look?
Yeah.
There were very few. I think people are saying that Emma Stone played it really safe. And she did look a little bit stars on ice.
But I don't think that color was safe at all.
But I think it really, I mean, I think it was,
I mean, it looked great,
but on her skin tone, it was very safe.
Yeah.
I think I loved Lupita Nyong'o's all pearl Calvin Klein custom dress. I didn't particularly like it on her because she's very flat busted and the look of that thing accentuated that kind of concave sternum that she has. But I liked the look of the gown.
Well, I was really the only reason I wanted to talk clothes was to piss everybody off.
Go ahead.
It's
part of your payment.
You've already mentioned who my favorite was, Marion Cotillard.
You know, a lot of people didn't like it. A lot of people called it a Dior diaper, but I thought it was genius.
I liked it because I know she probably got paid to wear it. I know it's probably a $50,000 dress that she didn't pay for, but it was still pretty daring, and she knew that she was going to catch flack for that, and she was just like, screw it. Because, I mean, you can't deny. I mean, people's criticisms I don't agree with, but, I mean, it was pretty obvious where they were going.
Yeah. I mean, not only that, she's French. All she has to do is walk around, and she looks good, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I loved that Patricia Arquette was just like, fly away hair, don't care.
And that was like a friend of hers that did her dress? That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I actually did like the design of the dress. I liked it very much.
It looked good on her.
Yeah, it did. And I the blue tuxedos, as a man, what is your thought of the dark electric blue on black tuxedo trend?
So who are we talking?
We're talking like five different guys who wore it.
Some of the like deep, deep navy ones I like. Jared Leto, no.
So tell me what you really think.
I don't care if it was Lanvin. I'm not. Nope.
At least you said it right.
That's right.
Now, David. And,
go ahead.
Okay. By the way, that's Studio Cat yelling, and I'm just gonna let her yell because she's Studio Cat. She can do what she wants. David Oyelowo wore red. I don't think any man should wear a red tux because I think it makes whoever it is look like a valet. Thoughts?
I agree. And, you know, I think navy can be edgy enough. I mean, you're just, you know, not quite doing something. You're doing something a little bit different. And, you know, it's the Oscars. It's black tie. Wear a black tie, not red tie.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a very stylish suit. It's, I mean, he's not even that young. I think he's like 38. But he, you know, he's a very sort of British dapper dude.
Right.
You know, he's one of those, you know, high fashion British dudes. So I guess he can get away with it. But it doesn't matter who the guy is. If I see a red tux, I'm going to throw him my keys.
Well, and the worst was Kevin Hart.
See, I couldn't. Kevin Hart, he like crawled into one of like
the black and white.
No. Like he crawled into one of like Chloe Moretz's pockets and disappeared, and I couldn't see him. I think that's how he got into the theater, as he rode in one of her pockets.
Well, I mean, it's been said, but Kevin Hart really did look like he stole John Travolta's tuxedo from the 70s.
Speaking of John Travolta, what did you think of the wig?
Oh, the wig and the 2 inches of makeup.
He did kind of look like Lon Chaney a little bit.
Oh, it was like a mannequin. I mean, it really was like that movie Mannequin with what's her name? Kim Cattrall.
What's her name?
Kim Cattrall from Mannequin. He looked like a mannequin come to life.
Did you want to talk about Jennifer Lopez's breasts?
There was a lot of them.
I mean, they were pleasantly symmetrical.
Very symmetrical.
Yeah, I thought that I enjoyed the symmetry of them.
And the fascinating thing about her was you really couldn't tell other than shadow where she stopped and the dress started.
That's true, but I like that.
I mean, did they dye that fabric to, like, her, did they get a skin graft or something?
But it didn't look bad.
No, it looks great, but I mean, it's just unbelievable that you could match a skin tone to your fabric.
Is there anybody's dress that you very much hated?
Hated? I'm looking at pictures now.
I mean, Dakota Johnson, I think the dress probably would have looked good on someone else, but she was so nervous and so she had such poor posture and she was clearly having such a bad time that the dress just looked amateur hour on her. It looked like she was going to prom, but
it wasn't
the dress. I don't think it was the dress. I think it was the way she wasn't carrying it right. It just wasn't, it wasn't doing anything for me.
Well, not to be crass, but she just didn't fill it out like it needed to be filled out.
Well, I don't blame her for that. I blame her tailors.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I blame her stylist for that.
And the one that I think was just really the worst,
mm-hmm.
Oprah.
Really?
And, you know, it's just because nobody's got the balls to tell Oprah you can't wear that.
I thought Viola Davis had a bit of a miss. She usually looks amazing. Like 90% of the time, she just knocks it out of the ballpark, and I just thought that was all wrong for her.
Remind me which one?
Viola Davis.
What was she wearing?
She was wearing like a large pink frock.
Oh, yeah. See, I don't like Zac Posen.
Yeah. No, not a fan.
Yeah, it looked like two giant pockets like flying out from her
exactly.
waist.
Exactly. It looked like the flying nun hat on a person.
Yeah, the pockets were preceding her.
Exactly. Yeah. It wasn't a good look for the band, as they say.
No.
All right. Do you want to read the final question?
I do.
Go ahead.
We're going to have to... Anonymous... that's kind of timely, asks, how much is an Oscar worth to A Star Who Wins? Did one of the winners ask this?
Yeah, Eddie Redmayne.
Who asked this? Eddie Redmayne wants to know.
Called me personally and was like, how much chingy am I getting, mate? And I was all, let me tell you. All right. Actually, this is pretty interesting stuff. A decade ago, winning an Oscar definitely meant more instant cash money for work. And that's because 10 to 20 years ago, there were mid-level, mid-budget movies that came in around $30 to $50 million in budget, and they were made all the time. Now, not so much. These days, people are either making tent poles like Guardians of the Galaxy that cost $100, $200 million, or they're making little low-budget indie things for $5 million. All right? Tent pole films don't care whether you've won an Oscar or not, right? The Marvel Universe, you're not going to cast Scarlett Johansson in the Marvel Universe because she won an Oscar. You're going to cast her because she's Scarlett Johansson and she looks amazing in that cat suit and she can act, right?
Right.
Okay. Indie movies don't have the budget to give you more money anyway because they're low-budget indie movies. So back in the day, 10 to 20 years ago, Oscar winners could get more money for those $30 to $50 million movies. They would get a jump of maybe $3 to $4 million in pay the next time they did one. Because the money was there and it wasn't a tent pole. Do you follow me so far?
I'm with you.
All right. That doesn't happen anymore, right? It does happen. The only place it really does happen is like if you're a supporting actor in a tent pole and they're looking for somebody like evil and British,
right?
You know, somebody high class to play the villain. You know how like the main lead is going to be like some bland white hunk and a hot white female, hot person, but the father or the Q character or the Morgan Freeman who helps Batman or the villain is always going to be some high class person, right?
Sometimes aren't they looking to just be able to say in the trailer and Academy Award winner, blah, blah, blah?
In the tent pole to class it up, yes.
Okay, yeah.
So that's where, for example, somebody who had been, and this is actually based up, somebody actually shared with me this information. I'm going to have to make this a blind item. But there was somebody who was, I'm not going to say whether he was nominated or he won, But before he got Oscar notice, he was mainly known as a character actor, maybe making six figures a movie, 100 grand to 200 grand per movie, which is pretty good. But then, right after the Oscar notice, he did a superhero movie in a supporting role and made like 1.2 million.
Mark Ruffalo.
Nope.
Mark Ruffalo.
Nope. Want to try again?
That's all I got.
You're guessing wrong.
Mark Ruffalo.
No.
Yes.
No, keep saying his name over and over again like a mantra, first of all, is not going to make him appear to you fully naked in your house. And secondly, it's not him. It's not him. All right? Huh. Not Mark Ruffalo. Here is one thing, though. Here is one way that actors even currently are getting more money out of their Oscar win. There are bonuses that they get when they are nominated and when they win an Oscar. Usually, it's built into their contracts when they first sign on for a role.
Oh, Bradley Cooper in that movie with the bad raccoons.
Nope. Not him either. Sorry. Don't ask anymore, though, because if you do come up, I don't want to lie to you, Clint. It's not chill to lie to my friends. Anyway, there is one way, like I said, that actors do get instant money built into their contracts when they take a role. Often it will say you get a bonus if you're nominated, bonus if you win. All right. And we're talking like 50 to 100 grand for a nomination, 100 grand for a win.
You there?
Yes. Are you there?
Okay.
Well, I just thought those numbers blew you away there for a minute.
Well, they did. But, you know, at the same time, that also the nomination means they're going to have to work harder because they're going to have to do press because they got nominated, right? So the money comes with the expectations.
Yeah, yes, it does. But then again, they're also getting free publicity out of it because they look really good. And
right, so, and free clothes.
Pity not the actor. So before we wrap up, tell me what's going on in Chill City. I understand another big actor has landed in Albuquerque, ready to do some work.
Adam Sandler is in the house, although he's up in Santa Fe.
Oh, what's he doing up there?
Netflix movie?
A Netflix movie. That's about...
No, Netflix TV show, I think, or series. I guess they're not.
That's about appropriate for him at this stage.
Stage of the game.
It's overdue,
I don't know
I would
who
say.
Else is in it, but he's been spotted at the in the Santa Fe.
Is he behaving himself?
As far as I know.
All right, will you keep an eye on that clown? I don't trust that clown.
Well, yeah. Happy Madison, Della, what's his bucket?
Yeah,
as I refer to him.
Yes. I don't trust him. I think he's hinky looking. All right, Clint, that about wraps up my show. Anything else you need to tell the kids about clothes before we go? Because
no,
that's your payment is to talk about clothes, so you may as well get it out in the open.
No, we talked about clothes a lot.
All right, good.
We're good.
Well, if anybody wants to reach me and ask me a question about the inside dope on how Hollywood really works, you can email me at leslie@thefamefatale.com. Tweet me at @FameFataleSays. Find me on Tumblr, where I have an account, but I don't know why. Find me on Instagram, where I have an account, and I don't know why. Or you can always find me on my homepage, www.thefamefatale.com. What about you, Clint?
I am on the Twitter, and it is at CBW. Uh-oh.
Talk to Clint about clothes. It'll make him happy.
You know, I don't think I've gained a single follower since I started giving that out.
Well, maybe you ought to start saying more controversial things.
Maybe.
We'll work on it.
Well, let's do.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.